Hey, I'm Duarte Geraldino, Deputy Managing Business Editor for Al Jazeera Digital. I'm in for Tanzina Vega. You're listening to The Takeaway.
We need to bring everybody along. Everybody.
It's a good night. It's a good night. And the seats be getting even better.
We won
Minnesota because of Amy Klobuchar. And we're doing well in Texas because of Beto O'Rourke.
What we need is a new politics that brings working class people into our political movement. One of us led the opposition to disastrous trade agreements, and that's me. When we began this race for the presidency, everybody said it couldn't be done.
The press and the pundits had declared the campaign dead. And then came South Carolina, and they had something to say about it. And we're told, well, when it got to Super Tuesday, it'd be over. Well, it may be over for the other guy.
Tuesday's gone with the wind.
Super Tuesday results are in. Joe Biden is on top. He won 10 of the 14 states that were in play. Bernie Sanders won 4 states, including California. Mike Bloomberg won American Samoa and then dropped out of the race today, giving his endorsement to Joe Biden. All of which means the shape of the race for the Democratic nomination is finally coming into focus. Black and Latinx voters across the country are a big part of that focus. Amy Walter is here to help us understand what it all means. She hosts Politics with Amy Walter from The Takeaway and is also national editor at Cook Political Report. Great to have you here, Amy.
Hey, Duarte. Thanks for having me.
And Adam Harris is also with us. He is a staff writer for The Atlantic. Adam, welcome back to The Takeaway.
Great to be here.
So, Amy, it was such a big night for Joe Biden. Where do we begin?
I know, right? Well, Adam and I were just saying before we got on air, what a crazy ride this primary has been from beginning to end. I mean, in some ways, we kind of have ended up where we began, well, what, a year ago, with the two best known folks with the biggest political brands, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, as the two candidates really left standing for the nomination here. They both represent very different elements of the Democratic Party. But I think what we learned last night are a couple of things. The first is that Democrats have been telling us in polls, in person, in focus groups, that the one thing that matters more than anything to them is that Democrats nominate somebody who can beat Donald Trump. And they've been twisting themselves in knots trying to figure out who the most electable candidate is, because every single candidate has flaws. There is no such thing as a perfect candidate. And as Sanders started racking up victories, and as he won especially big in Nevada, there was concern among so many Democrats that Sanders would not be able to win, and more important, would not just lose the presidency, but his presence on the top of the ticket would threaten control of the House, Democratic control of the House. And so Democrats, both the elected officials and the voters, decided, well, we got to rally about around the only thing we have left that looks electable, the only person who can kind of bring along a more diverse coalition, somebody who can win younger voters, or at least older voters, moderate voters, Black voters, and that's Joe Biden. And the other thing I want to point out that this evening told us is the importance of Donald Trump. I talked about electability, but Joe Biden went into the Super Tuesday with no money, no organization, and he was able to pick up states where he literally had not set foot. Yes, his name ID has something to do with it. Everybody knows who Joe Biden is. But Donald Trump is the best unifier and is the get-out-the-vote motivator for Democrats. Democrats want to beat Donald Trump. If you say you're the candidate who can beat Donald Trump, that's enough for them to vote for you.
So, Adam, you know, as Amy mentioned, There's all this talk about people of color and how they factor into this election. Did Biden do well with black voters?
Well, Jim Clyburn actually might be the most powerful person in politics right now, because it was really, you know, you saw Joe Biden fading with some of his black support in South Carolina ahead of Super Tuesday. And then he gets this Clyburn endorsement, who's the House majority whip. And, you know, all of a sudden, he gets this surge in South Carolina, right? 47% of people are saying that this endorsement is very important to their decision, or is at least important to their decision making. And, you know, that leads to a, you know, 60% advantage in South Carolina among black voters. That translates into a 60% advantage in North Carolina and Virginia among black voters. And, you know, those kind of sizable kind of, that's his starting base, right? You know, when you have that chunk of the electorate, that is a, you know, that's something you can build off of. But what the interesting thing that started to emerge was that, you know, he was turning out more voters than 2008, right? You know, you see increased turnouts in Virginia, you see increased turnouts in South Carolina. And these are states that are going to be, well, between Virginia and North Carolina, I should say, these are going to be states that are critical to winning in November. One of his lines last night during his speech, he's getting more elated and he's shouting and he's saying, you know, it's increased turnout and they turned out for us, right? So his argument is that not only am I electable, but I am getting people to turn out. And as Amy said, they're turning out because they believe that this is a person who might be able to defeat Donald Trump in November because of the kind of coalition that he's building between black voters, between suburban white voters, between white non-college educated voters. It's kind of the kind of coalition that they need to win in November.
And what about Latino voters? Any patterns emerging?
So you did see, at least in California, the early results were showing that about 80% of young Latino voters were swinging for Bernie Sanders. So that's a population where it's going to be, that's a heavy Sanders population. But Biden has historically been able to at least win some of that population, right? So if you're looking at Texas, it's going to be your older Latino voters who are going to swing more towards Biden. And generally, it's going to be more of your older voters who are swinging towards Biden. But it'll be interesting to see kind of as we're moving forward in this primary process where it's really a two-man race, kind of who is able to continue to hold on to those voters, if Sanders is able to continue to speak to those voters. In places like Florida, places like New Mexico and Arizona, whether or not that's a constituency that he can hold on to.
Mm-hmm. Amy, according to exit data, many voters appear to have changed their minds in just the last few days. Mm-hmm. What do we know about that? Is that typical?
No. The fact that this race literally turned on its heel in 3 days is something that most of us who cover politics you just don't see that. To me, the best example of this was Maine, a place where, again, according to the exit polls, for folks who said, no, I'd made up my mind who I was going to vote for earlier, you know, like within the last week or 2 weeks or last month or so, Sanders was winning those voters by something like 32 points. For the people who said they made up their mind in the last week, Biden won them by 22. So if things were going, and Colorado is a great example of this. Colorado was sort of like, I don't know, you know how you have those things that are trapped in amber, right? Like fossils trapped in amber. Colorado is a good sort of stand-in for amber because it's a vote-by-mail state. So most people voted before they learned about all these endorsements of Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar and all of this. And that's where Bloomberg also did much better than anywhere else. So you can sort of see this is where the race probably would have been with Bernie Sanders ahead, Bloomberg getting a good chunk of the vote, and Biden getting a fine but not really impressive showing in that state. You know, if every one of those states had voted on Friday instead of Tuesday, well, we'd be looking potentially at a, and this is why many of us were saying this, that Sanders was going to build a delegate lead that was going to be all but impossible for Biden to catch.
So just that single day or two made such a significant difference.
The other thing to remember about this moment that we're in, and as we said, this is really exceptional, but actually it's kind of par for the course at this very volatile political time that we're in. If we go back to 2016 and think about what turned the tide in 2016, especially in the general election, were those late-breaking voters, especially in those upper Midwest states, who had said to pollsters for months, I hate both of these candidates. I don't like Trump. I don't like Hillary Clinton. But they broke overwhelmingly at the very end for Donald Trump. And it was that movement in such a big number that put Trump over the top.
So, Adam, you know, just as a side note, I mean, there were reports of issues at polling places in California and Texas yesterday. What do we know about that?
So one of the things that's kind of been glaringly apparent from 2016 to now is that this idea of voter suppression is going to be a big element, right, where you have lines where someone's waiting up to 7 hours to vote. That's its own kind of voter suppression. There were reported issues with different machines going down and different things like that. But at a very baseline, right, there needs to be a increased attention to the election infrastructure in the United States. And that's not just the machines. That's also the amount of polling locations that are open, the type of polling the early polling locations that might be open, more attention to absentee or mail-in votes. California is actually trying a new system where at least some of the counties in California where you can kind of go to any polling location regardless of where it is to cast your ballot. But I guess one of the things to kind of come back to this idea of voter suppression, one of the things that is going to be increasingly important, particularly as we move towards November, is ensuring that these polling locations are open, that the hours are such that people are able to maneuver their schedules to get in and get out. Because waiting for 7 hours with someone who might have kids or might have to go to their shift at work or any number of things it is its own form of
even to go to the bathroom.
Even to
I
go
mean,
to the bathroom.
But you know, and literally getting through a ballot at the polling place can take a long time. So if you think about the ridiculously long lines there were for what was a pretty simple ballot here in the primary, now just triple the amount of time it's going to take to get through the ballot, and how much more time that's going to mean for people waiting in long lines.
Thank you so much. Adam Harris is a staff writer for The Atlantic. Amy Walter hosts Politics with Amy Walter from The Takeaway. She's also national editor of The Cook Political Report.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Support for The Takeaway is brought to you by LegalZoom. LegalZoom can help make sure your small business is set up for success this year. More information is available at LegalZoom.com/takeaway.
And Noom, a personalized weight loss program designed to give people knowledge to set new goals and the tools to stick to them for good. Learn more at Noom, N-O-O-M.com.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.